and the Save Disney campaign with keen interest. Their relationship with Eisner was, for all practical purposes, over. Their only hope was that Eisner would have to leave before their contract ended in 2005. The question was, who could hang on longer? At its June 2004 meeting, the Disney Board conducted a management review of all high-ranking Disney executives and pressed Eisner on the issue of succession. Iger finally got his wish. In the wake of the upheaval at ABC, Eisner told the board that Iger was his chosen successor as CEO. In July, Eisner and Iger both appeared at Herb Allen's annual Sun Valley Media Conference. This year's appearance loomed large for Eisner, his first conference since the humiliating shareholder meeting the previous March. He also promised Iger that he would introduce him to this exclusive crowd for the first time as his heir apparent. Eisner's talk drew a standing-room-only crowd. Afterward, there were some questions from the audience. But as the session reached its end, and even before Eisner received a warm round of applause, Iger rose from his seat and stalked out of the room, obviously angry, prompting a buzz of speculation. Eisner had failed to even mention Iger, let alone introduce him as his designated successor. Eisner later maintained that he assumed someone would ask him a question about succession, at which time he would have mentioned Iger, but no one did. At the shareholder meeting in March, Eisner had staked his reputation and his future on Disney's bottom line, and as the year unfolded, Disney remained on track to deliver the earnings growth that Eisner had promised. But much of the earnings came from DVD sales of Finding Nemo and Pirates, hits from 2003, as well as a recovering economy and higher attendance at the theme parks. At the feature film meeting I attended, Eisner had been right to worry about the summer of 2004. Disney's performance at the box office in 2004 was nearly as abysmal as 2003's had been outstanding. The studio unveiled a string of critical and box office flops. The much-touted Hidalgo, Alamo, Around the World in 80 Days, and most surprisingly, the latest Bruckheimer epic, King Arthur, each costing $100 million or more, opened to mostly devastating reviews and disappointing ticket sales, though King Arthur did better overseas. Even The Woods, now renamed The Village, Shyamalan's latest thriller, faded after a strong opening and tepid reviews. Although it eked out $100 million in domestic box office, it was no Sixth Sense. Another Bruckheimer film, National Treasure, performed well, but Disney didn't even have an event movie on its release schedule for the vital holiday season. The only sure thing seemed to be November's The Incredibles, but that, after all, was a Pixar project. Disney's own major animated release, the two-dimensional Home on the Range, sank from view with hardly a trace, all but sealing the fate of Disney's traditional hand-drawn animation unit. The film was excoriated as seldom funny, and the theme song as corny, jokey, by the New York Times. Its watercolor backgrounds were inevitably compared unfavorably to the vivid images of Finding Nemo. The forgettable score by the celebrated composer